Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
What a week we got. What an incredible week of headlines that will materialize come Thursday with the NBA trade deadline, and what the Warriors' future looks like is fascinating. How they go about securing their future will be fascinating. What happens at 7-14 as either picks or a trade? It's all fascinating. And to talk about it is a man that understands an awful lot of the prospects that we are trying to get to know. And when it comes to an international flair, there is nobody better than Fran Fraschilla. He is nice enough to join us here on Damon Ratto and Kolsky. Fran, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you, sir?
Damon, it's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. I'm out here, and I'm not in Tokyo. I'm trying to con people. I'm in Stamford, Connecticut, and we're doing the Olympics, and we better not lose tonight.
Say hello to our friend Kate Scott for us.
Kate's been great. We've had a great time so far. They are working her to the bone. She's doing both men and women overnight games, so she is right now. She is probably in the middle of a deep sleep, but she's been fabulous to work with.
Absolutely, your hours have to be all upside down. So I don't know if we got you up from a nap right now, but Fran, thank you very much for joining us. You certainly sound spry and ready to go. So let's just hop right in to, before we talk about what the Warriors should do, can you give us a little thumbnail sketch of what you think they are right now with the return of Klay Thompson, with James Wiseman showing up as a, you know, physically gifted prospect, but the basketball fit was not easy to see right away. What do you think of the situation the Warriors find themselves in before they even make a decision on Thursday?
Well, I think they're caught between, obviously, three potential Hall of Famers, probably at least one, probably two, maybe all three, in the seventh, eighth innings of their career. And now I think the decision for Bobby Myers and the Warriors is, do we add veterans to this group to make one or two runs at the Western Conference title and then hopefully an NBA Finals? Or do you take the best young player available in this draft? There's a couple of really good ones that I think would fit for them. But I think this is a Rubik's Cube. When you have Andrew Wiggins on the block, when you have potentially James Wiseman on the block, when you have a seventh pick and a 14th pick, what I think the Warriors are doing right now is they are weighing every potential opportunity to make this team better this year because of the window that's open. And I think you have to explore the idea of getting a veteran player. I think we all know that. And yet, it takes two to tango, so on draft night, they've got to be ready. In the event they can't pull off the deal they want to pull off, they got to be ready to, you know, make a pick at 7 and potentially make a pick at 14 as well.
Is there an internal logic for most teams to cut off all phone calls, up to like an hour before the draft, just be able to clear your head and go, okay, we've got all the offers we're going to get? Or do you keep fielding calls all the way through the first six picks because somebody might be holding out and then dangle the magic piece, 2 minutes before it's your turn?
Yeah, Ray, it's a relationship business, as most are. And I guarantee you they're going to be on the phone, if not just trying to make deals. They will definitely be on the phone trying to figure out who's thinking what. But no, my experience with people, my friends in the league, is that those phones are ringing off the hook. They're calling their people on various teams and trying to get the lay of the land, but they're also trying to make deals. That's just the way that works. And quite frankly, to your point, they may not get a deal done until the draft has already started. But I guarantee you, this started months ago. This started at the end of the season when they started to do their due diligence about free agency. See, you know, the thing that people don't realize about the NBA is the draft's important, but very few of these draft picks are going to make an immediate impact. Most of these guys are going to losing teams, and the team is going to be a losing team next year. Where the real rubber hit meets the road is August 2nd when free agency starts. And while the Warriors aren't in a position to do much in that area, all of this kind of fits together like a Rubik's Cube. So they're wheeling and dealing right now as far as the phones are going and trying to see if Bradley Beal can be pried. Do they want Siakam? A lot of people don't think they really are that interested in him. So they're just trying to figure out what's going on out there because they have to put this puzzle together going into next season.
Let's assume for argument purposes right now that they're unable to make one of the sort of blockbuster trades we're talking about.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things that I think has happened over the course of the last month is a guy who was viewed for a long time as a consensus top five guy in Jonathan Kuminga seems to be slipping to a point where he might be available to the Warriors. Now, I know he's seen as raw, so maybe not helping as immediately as they would like, but what can you tell us about why you think he's fallen and what kind of player you think he'll be?
Well, you know what's interesting? I haven't talked to any NBA personnel guy who thinks he's falling. The only people think that guys are falling or rising are the guys that didn't know in the first place. You know, like I'm not a big believer in guys rising. You just figured out that he was good enough to be in the spot you put him at the end of your mock draft because back in January, you had this guy, you didn't even have him in the first round.
Right.
So I don't buy any of the rising, falling stuff. I know there are teams in the top five that still think that this kid has the potential to be the best player in the draft. Now, I don't personally think he will be, but if he's there at seven, the dilemma for the Warriors is much like with Wiseman, is 2 to 3 to 4 years from now, you might have a very, very good player who at this point is raw. But I would be surprised if he's still there at seven. And I think if in the Warriors' case, what they've got to do as best they can, if they can't make deals, is find a guy or at seven or at 14 that they believe can help them now, but also has some potential to be a good player down the road when, you know, the big three are on their last legs, which is probably, you know, 2 to 3 years from now.
Talking drafts, talking prospects with Fran Fraschilla here on 95.7 The Game. When all of the what the Warriors might do at seven conversations started, Davion Mitchell was the clubhouse leader of the conversation. It seems almost that Moses Moody has worked his way into the clubhouse leader of possibilities. Can you give us a little report on both Davion Mitchell and why we should see him for the player that he is and not worry about how tall he is? And tell us a little bit about Moody, please.
Well, I love Davion Mitchell. I've got a chance to watch him for 3 years and at Baylor, obviously covering the Big 12. First of all, he's an amazing young guy. He's a very, very good athlete. He's really built like an NFL corner. He's from Hinesville, Georgia. I don't know how high school football coaches there ever let him get off the gridiron because he really is a great stop-start, speed athlete, great change of direction. Obviously, he's terrific defensively, especially on the ball. He really improved his outside shooting this year. And I'm a big fan, except that I think the way these mock drafts have worked, they overvalued him for much of the recency bias period after the NCAA tournament. I still think he's a top 15 pick. He would be a wonderful pick if he were to fall to 14 for the Warriors. But I think the size of measuring out a 6'1.5", is probably going to concern some teams. And also, I don't care about this, but some people think, you know, because he's 22 years old, that, you know, how much potential, long-term potential does he have? I don't buy that. In fact, he's almost 23, which is kind of interesting. So I get it. I get why, you know, people might be shying away from him or why he, quote-unquote, is dropping. Moses Moody, on the other hand, 19 years old, 6'6", built like a linebacker, can get to the basket, good free throw shooter, potentially a really good outside shooter. And ironically enough, an Arkansas kid that I would compare him to is another Razorback, Joe Johnson. But we're talking 19 again, and you're asking him to come in on a Warrior team that has, you know, wants to be good right away. And so, you know, in his case, I think we're talking about the future more so than the present.
You keep talking about how guys are rising or falling only in mock drafts rather than in NBA team offices.
Most of the time, Ray. Most of the time. I think what happens at the end of the cycle is medicals, and then the interview process when they come in. But I would say, by and large, NBA teams have enough information in the 3 weeks before the draft that they pretty much don't change their board too often. But didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, no. It's well, what I was going to ask is, can you rely on, let's say, a mock draft that's released today as being more representative of how teams are thinking? Or are mock drafts really not useful to you because you sort of know what teams are thinking already, and you probably know more than what most of the mock drafters are doing?
No, but I will tell you, you make a great point. When you get to about this time, this point in time, I would say that mock drafts, because of, and you know, there's a lot of them out there, some are better than others, but there's enough intel going around the league by this time, 48 hours before the draft, that I wouldn't say they're cemented in stone, but everybody has a better feel for, you know, what's going to happen. There's always going to be surprises. You know, Cam Johnson, the youngster with the Phoenix Suns, when the picks were traded, it was 6 for 11 with Minnesota, and then the Suns took Cam Johnson. Nobody had him in the top 25 because of his age, and all he's done has been a very, very good role player for the Suns, and was now kind of, I think, justifies the 11th pick. But I would say 80% of the kids going in the first round we now have a good idea of. But I also think there's always those guys that are hiding in plain sight, and then, you know, if I was working in an NBA front office, or if I was the GM, I would fire anybody who didn't lie to their friends. I don't think you can really tell anybody the truth right now. If there's somebody that you love at 7, you have to kind of play your cards close to the vest.
Is there anybody who would benefit from using the absolute opposite strategy, and which is to basically be hidden in plain sight as a counter move? Or is your philosophy that always lie in all situations at this point about this subject?
Well, I think it's Machiavellian, so I would say, yeah. It's almost like, it's like a baseball pitcher. You know, you just can't always throw fastballs. You have to throw some curves and changeups. And so, absolutely, I think the gamesmanship going on right now is there are people in this league that you trust, that you can rely on, you know, solid info. There's other people that you don't want to show your cards to. But ultimately, in a case like the Warriors, they have to rely on their relationships around the league because, in this situation, you got the 7th pick and the 14th pick. So you definitely have your ear to the ground. And this is just, again, I always kind of look at the draft as a total Rubik's Cube. You have to be ready, if you're at 7, to expect the unexpected. And I honestly believe good front offices have every scenario mapped out, because you have to get to where if somebody jumps up and takes the guy you want at 7 with the 4th or 5th pick, you have to be ready to shift quickly. And the thing that surprises me, guys, is there are, you know, if everybody in the league knew what they were doing from a GM standpoint, everybody would end up 41 and 41 every year. And so, you know, there are people who are better at wheeling and dealing in the final hours before a draft, and others that aren't as good. So, you know, you have to take advantage of that.
Fran Fraschilla is our guest, and I don't know if you guys are already working on it or if I should get started on the game theory of draft lies with Fran Fraschilla and Ray Ratto. In the meantime, one prospect I at least, and I think most people, know infinitely less about than most of the other guys here, and that's Alperen Sengun out of Turkey. Yeah. He's as high as the top 10 in a lot of places. What can you tell us about someone we have not really gotten to see?
Yeah, he's just turned 19. And, he's kind of the antithesis of the modern NBA big, where we're trying to get, positional versatility defensively and guys that can guard away from the basket. And this kid is really the opposite. He's an old school low post player. He's as strong as an ox. He can really score inside. He's going to be able to play away from the basket someday. He reminds me of Nick Vucevic, who's been traded this year, who's, you know, basically not, that's not a bad comparison. He's a two-time All-Star, but Nick's not the prototypical NBA center. Ironically enough, guys, half the centers in the NBA were born outside of the United States if you add them all up. But here's the interesting thing about Şengün, because he's not a super athletic kid. In a league, the Turkish Basketball League, which to me is the second best domestic league in Europe, it's, you know, right behind Spain, there are 30 former NBA players in that league. Now, we're not talking all-stars, but guys that have played in the league. And at 18 years old, this kid was the MVP. So that's kind of an indicator that there's something here. If the Warriors, for example, were to take him at 7-14, what you're hoping for is a Nick Vucevic type of, you know, Euro big man who could score inside, play away from the basket, and has a very good feel for the game and a good passer. The couple of young guys that have played in Turkey this year, one of them being Kyle Wiltshire, by the way, the former Gonzaga star, that I've talked to about this kid who played against him, said he's way stronger than I realized. And we're talking about now a 19-year-old kid who's 6'10", 240. So I think that's a reason he has, quote-unquote, risen, because a kid like that overseas, there was less opportunity this year with COVID to go over and see him often because of all the travel restrictions.
Fran Fraschilla here on 95.7 The Game. Your knowledge of these prospects is just, it's fantastic. If he had been born in Ann Arbor, we're calling him Wagner, but Wagner is the correct pronunciation.
Wagner, very good.
Can you tell us a little bit about Wagner, and can you tell us a little bit about Book Knight as well, please?
Yeah, now Franz Wagner is obviously the younger brother of Mo Wagner, who's, you know, I think got traded two times last year, is currently a free agent. But Franz is more of a small forward type. He's really I'm not in love with him early in this draft. I don't see one NBA skill that I think is elite, but he is a jack of all trades. He does a lot of things well. I would forecast him as a top eight rotation guy someday. Very mature. He played professionally, didn't get paid. Although, you know, maybe, you know, that doesn't really matter whether you played in the NCAA or Europe, because, you know, most of these guys do get paid, and they'll get paid now with the NIL. But this kid did play professional basketball as an 18-year-old with Albert Berwin. He just wasn't technically paid. So he's got maturity about him. I just see him as a nice role player in the league. To me, he's not the seventh pick. James Book Knight, love this kid. Love his long-term potential. He's a 6 foot, nearly 5 scoring guard. He's a late bloomer. He's a New York kid who has got a chip on his shoulder because he's one of those kids that was not on a top 100 list early in his high school career. He's been coached hard by Danny Hurley. He's not afraid of hard work, and I love his long-term potential. In the league, guys, creating your own shot is as important as making a shot sometimes, and this kid can go get his own shot. So I'm a fan of his. It would be interesting to see if somebody like the Warriors takes him at 7, because he's likely to be gone at 14, but I am a fan. I think he's going to be a good NBA player, a starting scoring guard.
We're going to let you go right after this because, well, while we'd like to keep you for another hour, I think you have better things to do. Walk us through the Olympics. Are we supposed to look at the American team as not quite up to the regular standard? Is Europe that much better? Or does COVID and sort of the compressed schedule that's been going on in basketball for the last 2 years basically make this just a crapshoot?
Well, I think the second. I think the latter, Ray, for sure. The best way to put it is Nikola Jokic, who would give his left arm in a given year to play for Serbia, played 109 regular season games in 10 months. And I don't even remember if that included these playoff games. But when he begged off, or whether it was the Nuggets, his agent, himself, when he begged off, it tells you how stressful the last, you know, 15 months have been in the NBA. The fact that these guys raise their hand, Durant, Lillard, et cetera, I give those kids all the credit in the world. This is a unique situation. It's not necessarily our best team. We have very good players on that team. We still are the favorite. But what you're dealing with right now, when it comes to particularly the U.S. versus Australia, Spain, and France, is talent versus continuity. These other teams haven't practiced for 6 weeks. They only had a two-week training camp. But when you talk about Gobert and Fournier, when you talk about Patty Mills and Joe Ingles and Dellavedova, we're talking about continuity over a decade. These guys know each other. They know the system. They know the culture. So I'm going to give the players a pass. But I will tell you, I was really disappointed. And I have never met Greg Popovich. He wouldn't know me from a hole in the wall. But I was really disappointed that he spent 2 years, quote-unquote, preparing for France. And we're out there switching at all five spots yesterday, and we've got Damon Lillard and Zach LaVine trying to guard Rudy Gobert inside. So we've got five games to figure it out. We really do. I think they're going to win the gold, but it is not going to be easy because you've got the four I mentioned. And, oh, by the way, the wild card, Slovenia, with that maniac 22-year-old. Who's just incredible, Doncic.
Fran Fraschilla, again, the king of international prospects. It's so good to talk to you about all the prospects coming out of college. Just one selfish question here. How do you think my man Mike Woodson's going to do in Bloomington?
You know, excellent. He's put together a great staff, Damon. I think that, first of all, he's never going to be out-coached. The coaching in the NBA is trigonometry compared to arithmetic in college, honestly. So the coaching part's going to be no issue. Juwan Howard proved that. It's always about the talent, and I think he's got a group of guys around him, a good staff that's going to get him players, and I think Mike is going to be a really good fit in Bloomington.
Fran, thank you so much for joining us. Please give our friend Kate Scott a cup of coffee the next time you see her. And I can't thank you enough for coming on today. I'll just end with a go Jaspers forever. Thank you very much.
I like it. Thank you, guys.
There he is. Great former coach of your Manhattan Jaspers.
Really is unparalleled when it comes to just overall international and just general prospect knowledge.
Fran Fraschilla, baby. The guy knows the sport.
Well, he knows exactly what his strength is and has basically devoted his career to it.
Yeah.
Rather than try to be the multiflex guy who knows some stuff about a lot of things. You get to be an expert by basically locking in on one thing, or in this case, two, because he understands, you know, prospects and Europe.
Yeah. And by the way, gave me cover for a couple of takes I'm pretty excited about on my own accord. First of all, Greg Popovich is booting the Olympics like a loser. And second of all, James Booknight. I kind of like James Booknight. I'm kind of intrigued. Starting scoring guard, he said. Warriors need guys who can create their shot. Just saying.
I think we can take Davion Mitchell's name off the top of the show's draft board.
At seven.
At seven. Thank you very, very much. At seven. Boy, we should ask about Chris Duarte. Can we get Fran Fraschilla back on the damn phone?
We got Mark Grandy.
That's right. Grandy can give us the scouting report, the thorough Oregon scouting report.
I got a good scouting report on Duarte ahead of time. I think Duarte, Mitchell, to me, if you can get someone who you believe can grow into a top two type player on a team with seven, then with 14, you go with a guy who you really think can help you today and maybe has a little lower ceiling in the long term.
So he got me a little excited at 14 for Alperen Sengun.
I don't know if he's going to make it.
Sengun.
I mean,
Sengun.
There is something about beating adult men when you're 18 or 19. He was 18 during the season. Like, adult men saying, God, he's strong. That really says something. Remember, and again, he's not Luka Doncic. I'll tell you that right now. But one of the things that clued a lot of people into how good Luka was is that in a league, Spain, filled with adult men, he was an MVP.
Yeah.
And that's interesting. The problem is, yeah, boy, if he's at 14, I think you probably do take him. The problem is, does he... Even if he is one of the guys who is as NBA ready as anyone, is he the right type of player for what the Warriors want to do and for who they already have is a bigger question.
It's a big question. And that's a big question at 7. It's a big question at 14. And it's a big question whenever you start talking about putting together a package to make a trade. How about this? I really like Bradley Beal. I don't think I like him with the Warriors. And I'll tell you why when we come on back in just a moment here. Bananza, we promised you how crazy this week was going to be. It's already delivering. We've got Dodgers in town, training camp opening, NBA draft, and we're going to be at Shea Center on Thursday. We're really looking forward to getting over there. NBA free agency, and like Fran just said, boy, things really start cooking in the NBA that day as well, even though the Warriors can't be huge players in that moment. What they do on the fringes of that moment will be huge. This is an incredible week of sports. Bananza, baby, brought to you by Pacific Catch. Sustainable seafood, West Coast style. Damon Ratto and Kolsky, 95.7 The Game.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Just an awesome conversation about prospects, drafts, what's going to happen, who could the pick be with Fran Fraschilla. Great, great stuff. Nice job. Nice job, Lucas. Good booking. I know he's been working on that one for a while. Nice job. Nice job. We have so much to still get into today. An awful lot coming up with the Major League trade deadline, what Max Scherzer could mean to the balance of power in the National League West. It's not just the Giants rumor. It's a Dodgers rumor. It's a Padres rumor. The Padres already, obviously, they made the big move. Adam Frazier is now a Padre. It's a guy that we had talked about. So there's an awful lot of baseball coming up a little bit later on today. Brian Kenny is going to join us at 4:15. How do you feel about Bradley Beal? I mean, just as a player, not even as a Golden State Warrior. I mean, do you really think he's as good as the season that he just had, where he was the second leading scorer?
I think he's close to that. I think he benefited some from Russell Westbrook being a pathological passer as well as a pathological driver. I think he would be a very useful addition to nearly every team, depending on what it cost you to get him. I think there is, however, a point at which you're paying too much for something you might already have. So I think there are some teams that would normally be intrigued with him, but already have that position or set of positions solved, which is why I don't think he is an ideal fit for Golden State, even without the cost being, I think, prohibitive.
What's your thumbnail sketch on Beal?
I think I might like him more than both of you guys do, and I'm still not sure I would. I mean, again, it depends on price, but if it costs sort of everything, I'm still not sure I would do it just because of what it does to the future of the franchise. Here's the thing. Bradley Beal became the second leading scorer in the NBA by becoming more efficient, not by, like, not, you know, Russell Westbrook, I'm sure, had an effect, but it's not like he shot more. He scored 30 a game last year, and he was over 31 this year because he shot it better with arguably more attention on him defensively. Here, with less attention on him defensively, I don't think 50-40-90 would be out of the question. Like, that's how good of a scorer this guy is. He, earlier in his career, when he was shooting less from three and had less of a, you know, less volume overall as a shooter, he was a 40% three-point shooter. That's gone down as he's gone from, you know, five or six attempts a game to nine. But with less attempts, more open, I think 40% is back in the conversation. Like, this guy would add a legitimate third scorer at or around the level of Stephen Clay, and that would be unreal. And the way he can create a shot off the dribble is probably better than, certainly better than Clay, arguably better than Steph. He's a tremendous offensive player, and I don't think his defense is terrible. I worry about what it would do to depth, and I worry about what it would do to the future, and I worry that having your best three players be guards, just as a general rule, could be tough. Now, maybe Clay's a little slower. You'd rather have him at the three, but then you're admitting to a pretty massive defensive downgrade and trading a guy who, if Clay's not your second best defensive player behind Draymond, it's Wiggins, right? So it's not a perfect fit. He's great, but between not being a perfect fit and the cost it might take to get him, I just don't think I would do it.
Beal is a total stud, even though he shoots an awful lot. Like you said, the percentages have put him into the place where you can't call him a volume shooter.
Not in a bad way.
He's not in a bad way. He's the kind of guy who scores enough to where you want him to take an awful lot of shots, which, by the way, is how I would describe Steph Curry. And Klay Thompson at his best as well. I think Beal is a total stud. It took him 24 shots a game to get to 31.4 points per game last year. He's 6'3". He averaged 4 assists per game over his 9-year NBA career. That is a career assist average. What worries me about Beal is how he would fit in with the Warriors. Yeah, the temptation of a 60-point per game backcourt is kind of sexy. But I don't think either guy is living in that 30-point range with the other guy on the team. It's going to be a little bit like Kevin Durant in terms of, well, he has to shoot more, which means Curry shoots a little less. And to me, that's the wrong way to go about getting the best out of the Curry era at this point in time. To me, the question, more than any other thing, more than any other fit, more than any other prospect, more than any other assets or collection of assets that you would be giving up at this point in time, to me, it's real simple. The question is a simple one. How do you best help the Steph Curry era succeed? I think the Steph Curry era needs to improve in three ways, and I don't think Bradley Beal helps you improve in any one of these three ways. The Warriors have one player taller than 6'10", James Wiseman. The 6'10 guy is Alan Smilagic. So you have a 7-footer that you're not all the way confident in, and Smilagic, who you have no confidence in. At 6'3", it's very easy to conclude that Bradley Beal does not make the Warriors bigger. I think they need to be a bigger basketball team. The Warriors need better rebounding. It's amazing how this goes hand in hand with size, don't you think? They're 22nd in total rebounding last season. Steph Curry is a better rebounder than Bradley Beal has ever been. The Warriors were 22nd in free throw attempts. You need a guy who's going to attack the rim more to get to the line more. And even though it's safe to say that Beal is that guy more than even Curry is, Curry really got fancy around the rim this year. Career free throw attempts for Steph Curry, 4.2. So for Beal, it's got to be a lot more, right? 4.6. He shoots jump shots.
Two things, though, on
that. He attacks the rim more, but he's a jump shooter, man. He really is.
But the last 2 years are different. He's been around 8 attempts a year the last 2 years for Beal. And I think that reflects, as he's gotten older, a willingness to attack the rim more.
I agree.
And as he's had more responsibility, a willingness to attack the rim more. But it's still... And honestly, on the rebounding thing, too, like, Bradley Beal's a good rebounding guard, but to your point, so Steph Curry, and that's not solving the problem.
You got to get bigger. He doesn't make you bigger. You got to get better on the boards. He does not make you better on the boards. You got to get to the line, and even though he's doing it more now, I mean, you need a slashing rookie. Get to the line with Bouknight. Get to the line with Moses Moody. Get to the line with a slasher, because you don't want that raw talent necessarily shooting too many jump shots. Use your raw talent to get to the rim, young athletic rook. The other thing that I think we would all agree, Steph Curry, as great as the handle is, he can get sloppy with the ball. So does Bradley Beal. Curry is at 3.4 turnovers per game last year. Beal was at 3.1. So it's like you're getting the most efficient Bradley Beal we've yet seen, yet still not nearly as efficient as Steph Curry just taking 10 more shots per game, and we'll pretend those are Bradley Beal and get younger with your draft picks. If Steph Curry were at the last drop of his competitive relevancy, Beal would be the right guy because he'd be looking to pass the torch. You're not at the pass the torch moment. Steph is not at the last drop. He's still three cups away from his last drop. I just don't think I like Beal. Beal's really good. I don't think he's the right fit with the Warriors. It's two steps forward to take two steps back eventually because you're going to gut any semblance of size, rebounding, or depth.
The attraction that people see in Beal for Golden State is largely a function of the Warriors have available assets to pile up on their Jenga board. And they've been trying to fit one person or another into that deal really since the Warriors, since the draft order was announced. You know, it was Ben Simmons. No, it's Pascal Siakam. Now it's Bradley Beal. I think most of these rumors have been predicated on the notion that somebody needs a lot of assets and they have a really good player. Let's think about this trade from the team that would be getting the assets rather than the team that would be getting Beal or Simmons or Siakam. I think they've been sort of focused on, well, the Warriors have these things that they can give to the team I'm interested in.
But it's also the Warriors are in a situation in the, you know, timeline of their franchise where it would make sense for them to add somebody who had a huge effect on the ability to win today, as opposed to add a few guys who have, you know, a marginal effect on the ability to win today, but potentially bigger effect down the road. See, to me, that you're sort of three cups left on Curry thing is central to the way I think about this. I think Curry's got a few more years of I can still be the best or second best player on a title team. And then after that, I think he's got several more years of productive basketball where he can be a legitimate contributor. And to me, if I'm the Warriors, I'm trying to find a scenario where we at least are in the conversation for that whole time. Not just the next two, not just the next three when Curry's the best guy, but maybe bring in a couple young prospects who can develop into a higher quality player by the time Curry actually is diminishing considerably, which, again, hopefully is several years away. Like, that for me is the best of both worlds. And even if it results in a slightly lower chance of winning the title this year, I think it improves your chances of winning a title sometime in the next 8 years.
The decisions the Warriors have coming up on Thursday are nothing short of massive. And Bob Myers has got an awful lot of moving, fluid situations to consider leading up to it. We will be at Chase Center on Thursday to cover the NBA draft. We're very excited to be there. Stick around. Much more coming up, including our conversation with Brian Kenny a little bit later on here on Damon Ratto and Kolsky. Brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full-service banking. No compromises.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Still really kind of dazzled by an awesome conversation with Fran Fischilla, who got us talking about potential draft picks. And we'll give you some sound today from earlier on our very own channel. And speaking of channels, get the new Odyssey exclusive app right now with all kinds of channels. Music channels, sports channels, channels to set your tone for your workout, your road trip, your summer barbecue. Check it all out. Odyssey exclusive stations on the Odyssey app, brought to you in part by Macy's and Geico. Welcome on back, Damon Ratto and Kolsky. Pressure-filled week, to say the least. And we are going to be at Chase Center on Thursday for the NBA draft, what the Warriors do. It's fascinating stuff. We are going to talk about it until it actually happens. One of the names that Fran brought up that I thought was really interesting was his breakdown of James Bouknight out of UConn. Well, today on our midday show, Dan Hurley, head coach at UConn, stopped on by to talk about his player, James Bouknight.
You know, obviously in today's NBA, you know, the ability, you know, to create his own shot, to win one-on-one matchups. You know, he's a guy that's incredibly dynamic with, like, making difficult shots. If you look at NBA playoff basketball, you know, it's usually about a shot maker or a playmaker getting the ball in his hands and, you know, creating his own shot or breaking down a defense. And, you know, just in a one-on-one situation, you know, James, he's incredibly hard to deal with.
You know, any coach stumping for their player before the draft is going to tell you what he likes most. It's pretty much the exact same thing that Fran said, though. Fran said this is a guy who will be a starting guard in the NBA. Starting guards in the NBA, and not that Fran is the end-all be-all of anything that could happen, but if you can get yourself a starting shooting guard at 7, you probably should. That sounds like a pretty good idea if that's indeed what Bouknight could be.
Yeah, that's the one thing about college coaches talking about their guys is they see their skill sets in the context of the teams they're on. And the question about whether James Bouknight will be a starter in the NBA depends almost entirely on where he goes. Because his skill set isn't going to change, but the players around him certainly will. Like, let's say if hypothetically Washington took him and didn't trade Beal and didn't trade Westbrook, James Booknight's not going to be a starter there just because...
He said in the long term.
Well, I don't know how you can project that either, because the long term, a million things can happen. What he can say is that makes sense is he's got the kind of skill set that could make him a starter given the right situation. But there are a lot of guys who come out of every draft with the talent to be a starter who never start.
I don't know that I agree with that. You think there's a lot of guys in every draft with the talent to be a starter who never start in the NBA? Why?
Well, the draft is 60 deep.
Yeah, but not all those guys have the talent to be a starter. In fact, most of them, I would argue, do not have the talent to be a starter in the NBA in the long term.
Well, I mean, Jordan Poole may never start in the NBA.
I don't think anyone ever would have suggested he, projected as a starting two guard, though.
At any point?
No, he was, the 30th overall pick?
It was 29. I mean, he was down there. The fact that he was able to show up and contribute was a real positive step forward.
Right,
where if you're
going
to be a starter in the NBA, we're probably beyond that.
Yeah, we might be in a hole here, but I guess what I'm saying is what Fran said about James Bouknight, I do not think he would have said about someone like Jordan Poole. I mean, I think that's what the commentary is that James Bouknight is a guy with the talent and scoring ability that means you expect to see him starting in the NBA at some point, or Fran does.
We asked him about Franz Wagner, and he said, look, I like the player, and who the hell knows? That is how sports works. But he doesn't see today a discernible, identifiable NBA strength where, maybe he does see some clearly identifiable strengths in a guy like Bouknight. What's going to be really interesting, and this is another guest booking that Lucas has been efforting, is Moses Moody's coach at Arkansas just happens to be kind of a friend of the show. It's Eric Musselman. We talked to Coach Mus a lot throughout the years.
Just for fun sometimes.
Yeah. And what's really interesting, and of course he's going to be stumping for his guy, but he understands implicitly what NBA talent needs to be, and he understands the Golden State Warriors. Well, maybe not as they're currently owned and constructed, because, he wasn't here for the good times, but he understands what it's like to be a Golden State Warrior more than any other college coach. One more, by the way, from Dan Hurley on Bouknight and what fit he might be in the NBA.
We played him probably more like a lead guard here, which I think is going to help him in terms of decision making when he gets to the next level. But, James could play with anybody because, the kid is a competitor. He loves basketball and he shows up every day, like he's a nobody to the facility because, he hasn't had his butt kissed his whole career on the way up.
I like that. I like someone who's not an AAU darling right from the get-go and thinks that he's got a whole bunch coming to him that might not be deserved. That's the kind of humility you're looking to see fit on in. So that was Dan Hurley on the Midday Show today. Dana Altman, he was on our morning show. And what's interesting is Dana Altman is the coach of Chris Duarte. And this was a really good question you asked Fran, Ray. Are mock draft players rising and falling because mock drafters are really saying this player is better, or is it coming from true NBA front office pivots and decision making? And we don't know the answer to that, right? Here's what Dana Altman had to say about Chris Duarte, who you don't need to go deep into the internet to find out that he kind of is the rising bell of the ball in this draft from, somewhere in the 20s to he might be slipping into the lottery. Here's Dana Altman on the Oregon Duck.
Well, first of all, I think because of his age and because of his maturity, both physically and emotionally, I think he's ready to contribute right away. I think, he can shoot, which definitely will stretch defenses. He was 40-some percent from three in the college level, and he's got a high release, and he's strong enough. He'll be able to adjust to the NBA three very quickly.
Good, because they're going to need that, right? Here's more.
He can't put it on the floor. He's solid in pick-and-roll situations. He's really good in the open court. With our presses and some of our fast breaks, he's really good in the open court, which I think will translate well. But he gives you another shooter. With whatever team is fortunate enough to work with him, he can space the floor. And I think that's where it'll start, as an NBA player, is just being able to stretch the floor a little bit.
Now, we saw a guy like Jordan Poole start to suggest that he's got the talent to be called an NBA shooter, shot pretty well when he came back from his G League assignment, and definitely earned some minutes, bailed the Warriors out in a few games. There's no doubt about it. What you constantly heard was, well, his defense isn't right enough for Steve to trust him at great lengths. Is there a single rookie whose defense is going to be good enough for Steve Kerr to trust out there? I don't know.
Yeah, I think there's a few, and I think he's one of them. I mean, I assume that's what you're getting at. Duarte is on that level. defensively. And if you're just trying to think, well, what can he, how can I compare him? Did you like what you saw from Cameron Johnson in the playoffs this year?
I did.
That's a guy who slipped a little because he was 23 at draft time. He did certain things really well, specifically shoot and play some defense. And we, granted, like, he's not even a 10-point-per-game scorer. No one's going to confuse Cam Johnson with a star. But we watched him have a significant effect on playoff basketball this year in his second season at age 24, which is the age that Chris Duarte is going to come into the league at. I think of all the people, like, if you're trying to decide, usually in the draft, it's who has the biggest upside. If the question the Warriors are asking, particularly at 14, is who can help us the most right now, he might be number one in the whole draft. Certainly, he's number one in the 14 range in terms of he plays D, he's athletic enough to play in the NBA, he's a knockdown three-point shooter. Those, you can use all three of those skills right now.
Would you take him at 7?
No.
Why not?
Because to me, 7 is an opportunity to get someone with a chance to be a star one day. And I don't think Chris Duarte has that chance.
Dana Altman on Duarte's defensive abilities.
He's a very good defensive player. He was on the all-defensive team for the Pac-12. He's a solid rebounder because of his length, because of 6'6", and he's not afraid to stick his nose in there. So, I think he can contribute in a lot of ways, but the first way will be stretching the floor as a shooter.
Interesting. God, what a moment in time this is going to be for the Warriors. I mean,
if you watch his highlights, Duarte, it's defense, three-pointers, and dunks.
They could use that.
It's all stuff they can use. And, our Oregon insider, Mark Grandy, can probably give us more details on his things like rebounding ability. But, boy, there's just, especially if you do get a guy at 7, whether it's Kuminga or Booknight, who you think has a really high ceiling, and, maybe we can find a way to get something from him this year, but we're really drafting them because of the long-term view. I think Duarte becomes a really good option at 14. Or Mitchell, for that matter, if he lasts to 14.
Well, the question I would have then, if Duarte does all those things, what would you package with the 14 to try to move up to, say, 10 or so and make sure that nobody gets him ahead of you if he's that good a fit?
Well, if that was a big concern, I think you've Smiley Geach. I don't know what you have.
What do I have to do to put you in Alan Smiley Geach today?
I'm not giving you Jordan Poole. You want Eric Paschal? Basically, I'd be willing to trade an irrelevant asset or a future protected pick or second rounder or something to move a couple spots up. My instinct is I don't think you'll have to do that. And the other part of that is, he probably helps you more next year than anyone, but if someone's taken him at 10 and that means that Davion Mitchell falls to you at 14, I'll keep the other assets and take what I get.
Let me tell you, I do think that everyone who's just circling, like, next year is the year that the Golden State Warriors have to be back in the NBA Finals or it's a mess. Wrong. It's 2 years from now. We all agree Klay Thompson is a, like, him being awesome is an important part of it. It's as important to the equation as any other element of the equation. He's part of the Pythagorean theorem of getting back to the NBA Finals. He won't be nearly as good this year as he will be next year.
Yeah, I think there's some hope he'll be close to that by playoff time. But certainly when we start this year, he's probably not even going to be on the floor. And throughout the bulk of the year, he's not going to be at his best. There's no question. That said, I still do. First of all, the difference between a rookie who contributes this year and one who contributes significantly a year from now is probably not that big. But also, I think, again, the two picks gives you an opportunity to say, with one of these, we got to get somebody whose ceiling we love, who we think is a big-time player down the road. But with the other one, maybe we do lean a little towards team fit and ability to help fast. Not so that you end up passing on a guy who's going to be a 10-time All-Star to take a guy who's going to be a bench player, but a little bit. It's always a sort of lean one way or the other. Do I lean towards talent or do I lean towards immediate help?
I think with one of these picks, the Warriors are going to want to lead in towards immediate help.
And by the way, welcome everyone to your 4 o'clock hour.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with autopay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without autopay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.